I have many blessings in this life. One of my most dear blessings is the fact that I've known and been friends with Sasha since, like, what, 1974, 75, our old Brahmachari days? And he still considers me a friend. That's a pretty good blessing.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Balava Giri Vanadari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi jana ballava giri vanadari Yasura nandana braja janaranjana Asuranandana Braja Janaranjana Yamuna Tira Banchari Yamuna Tira Banchari Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Ballava Giri Vanadari Yasura Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Shama Sundar Radha Shama Sundar Radhe Jaya Krishna Balaram, Jaya Krishna Balaram, Jaya Krishna Balaram, Jaya Krishna Balaram. Jaya Gauranitai, 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 Jaya Gauranitai. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada 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 Jaya Prabhupada
Jai Nitya Lila Pravista Astatara Sata Sisi Manas Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Premsakaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Shri Graha Shivasri Gaur Bhakti Vindhi Sri Sri Radha Shama Sunda Gopa Gopinath Sham Kunda Radha Kundi Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Sri Akhara Sivati Ki Jai Gaur Bhimanandi All glories to the Assembled Devotees All glories to the Assembled Devotees All glories to the Assembled Devotees All glories to the lotus feet of Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing today our reading of Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, third chapter, verse 11, As the purport was a lengthy one and it was split between 2 days, I'll just chant the Sanskrit through and then we'll pick back up in the purport.
Etavam hevaya jattam ihani shreya shodhaya bhagavat achalo bhavo yad bhagavat sangata.
Etavam, all these different kinds of worshippers.
Eva, certainly.
Yajatam, while worshipping.
Eha, in this life.
Nishreyasha,
the highest benediction.
Udaya, development.
Bhagavati,
unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Akala, unflinching.
Bhava,
spontaneous attraction.
Yet which?
Bhagavat,
the pure devotee of the Lord.
Sangata, association.
Just one note about this word for word here. The word bhava is used. I had the good fortune of being in an association of a handful of devotees discussing some topics the other day, and the question of one's bhava came up. The translation here is spontaneous attraction. So unless that attraction is spontaneous, that's what it says here. Translation.
All the different kinds of worshippers of multi-demigods can attain the highest perfectional benediction, which is spontaneous attraction, unflinchingly fixed upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, only by the association of the pure devotee of the Lord. Two caveats in this verse, two important. You can get, but.
Just like sometimes mom and dad will say, well, okay, you can do this, but first you have to. So it's being stated here, you can get this spontaneous love, but it has to be, you can get this attraction for love, but it has to be spontaneous and it has to be unflinching. So picking up in the purport,
the Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter, verse 25, affirms, yanti devavata devam, pratin yanti pratin vata, bhutani yati bhute ja, yanti madhyajavimam.
The worshippers of demigods reach the respective planets of the demigods, and the worshippers of forefathers reach the planets of the forefathers. The gross materialist remains in the different material planets, but the devotees of the Lord reach the kingdom of God. We also have information from Bhagavad Gita that all the planets within the material world, including Brahmaloka, are but temporarily situated, and after a fixed period, they are all annihilated. Therefore, the demigods and their followers are all annihilated at the period of devastation. But one who reaches the kingdom of God gets a permanent share in eternal life. That is the Vedic, a verdict of the Vedic literature. The worshippers of the demigods have one facility more than the unbelievers due to their being convinced of the Vedic version, by which they can get information. By which they can get information of the benefit of worshiping the Supreme Lord in the association of the devotees of the Lord. The gross materialist, however, without any faith in the Vedic version, remains eternally in darkness, driven by a false conviction on the basis of imperfect experimental knowledge, or so-called material science, which can never reach into the realm of transcendental knowledge. Therefore, unless the gross materialist or the worshippers of the temporary demigods come in contact with the transcendentalist, like the pure devotee of the Lord, their attempts are simply a waste of energy. Only by the grace of the divine personalities, the pure devotees of the Lord, can one achieve pure devotion, which is the highest perfection of human life. Only a pure devotee of the Lord can show one the right way of progressive life. Otherwise, both the materialistic way of life without any information of God or the demigods and the life engaged in the worship of the demigods in the pursuit of temporary material enjoyments are different phases of phantasmagoria. Has anybody ever heard that word before they met Prabhupada? Phantasmagoria? Prabhupada's amazing in that way. They are nicely explained in the Bhagavad Gita also, but the Bhagavad Gita can be understood in the association of pure devotees only, and not by the interpretations of politicians or dry philosophical speculators. Om Agyanata Marandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksu Unmalitam Yinakasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachanam Pangumlam Jayate Girim Yakrigatamaham Bande Shri Gurum Dinitharina Sri Guru Paramananda Premananda Palapada Bhajananda Mananda Seva Mindanjaya Vansha Kapatudu Vishcha Kripa Sindhu Vaheva Chapatitanam Pavanibdo Vaishnavibhya Namonamaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunitananda Sri Advaita Gadara Srivasadi Sri Gaura Bhakti Vinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances unto you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. So, just by coincidence, if there is such a thing as coincidence in devotional life, the series of classes that I've been listening to in the morning are Prabhupada's lectures on this exact chapter. And it's a series from 1972. And there's, a certain level of immaturity or unawareness in the devotional life of the disciples at that time. Now, this isn't a criticism, don't misunderstand me. But if you compare classes from the different periods, like in 1972 to my favorite time period, the classes in 1974, Prabhupada was, the devotees had started to get it, and Prabhupada was just reciprocating. And then in 1976, as he was in the fire, traveling around America and establishing, just everything. So if you compare those different times, you'll see that there's a different level of maturity amongst those who are hearing, because you can hear from the conversation, and then you'll also experience that Prabhupada's speaking presentation is deeper, has more substance to it. This is my observation. So, unfortunately, on the particular day when Prabhupada was speaking on this exact verse, he also recited two other verses, combined them all together, and covered with everyone chanting, and with the word for word for each one, and the translation for each one, and the purport read by Prajumna for each one, and as a result, he didn't speak a whole lot on the individual verses, particularly on this verse 11. So there wasn't a lot of resource to mine in that regards. But we do have his words on the balance of this chapter, and that gives us a sense of direction, a sense of insight into the way Prabhupada is presenting this subject matter. Now, in this verse and in the purport itself, we understand that Prabhupada is making clearly three distinctions. The nature of analysis is to look at something and divide it up, break it into understandable settings or groups or categories, and then analyze those and see their correlation. So the three distinctions Prabhupada makes here are gross materialist, demigod worshippers, and followers of the Vedas, or the Vedantist. Now, the first category, gross materialist, honestly speaking, they're being very much frowned upon in this section of the Bhagavatam. And they're actually dismissed. I was discussing with someone the other day, I suggested an idea to an individual, and they went like that. That's really a dismissal. It's like, go away. Don't bother me. Oh, please. Like that hand gesture. And that hand gesture verbally is what this section of the Bhagavatam is for the gross materialist. Oh, please. Now, the quotes that we see in this regards are quite strong. Prabhupada says, for instance, in one part here, apart from the gross materialist, who care very little for God or the demigods. Okay, right off the bat there, dismissing, the function of the rules of the universe. Secondly, the gross materialists do not believe in the existence of God or in the existence of the demigods. And then the gross materialist remains in different material planets after their death. So all of these statements about what the gross materialists do and get are not very encouraging if one is on the path of bhakti. One reads these and thinks, well, I don't want to be like that. So what do I have to do to avoid that? Now, it's interesting, we see Prabhupada's use of the word gross. Now, according to Mr. Webster,
we find that gross is defined as a blatant, very obviously an unacceptable wrongdoing. Okay, that makes sense with how Prabhupada's categorizing it. Or in our modern urban slang, gross refers to something that is seen as disgusting or inducing nausea and revulsion. Okay, for one on the path of bhakti, that's certainly there. Or according to our friends at Calvin and Hobbes, gross stands for get rid of slimy girls, which, taking away the humor side of the comic strip, is actually on the subject of rejection, getting rid of something that's not wanted. So in all of these instances, we see that the word gross is very accurately used by Prabhupada. It's interesting because, you know, there's that famous story of Shruti Kirti coming in the room, Prabhupada's reading his books. Maybe it was I don't remember which one. Both of them wrote so many wonderful things about their pastimes, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was reading his own Bhagavatam. Oh, Prabhupada, you read your books? Yes, I want to see what Krishna has written. Prabhupada understood the importance of being a channel, while at the same time, the audience he was speaking to and his presentation, very specific words. When Prabhupada was translating, there was no disturbance because it was a deep meditation. When Prabhupada was preparing his Bhaktivedanta purports, he was channeling the teachings of all the... some of you may know this, Prabhupada always traveled with two books in his little briefcase that was always kept locked up. I had the good fortune of making a secure lock place for that for Prabhupada in Chicago. At any rate, he always carried two books in his briefcase. One was the English Sanskrit dictionary, and the other was the commentary on the Bhagavad by all the acharyas. And Prabhupada always had these on his desk, and he would study from these. So his effort was to bring all of this through this medium and give it to an audience that, I mean, look at us. Okay, 50 years after the fact, we may look a little different, but in reality, at that time, we knew nothing. So Prabhupada was very specific in the words he used. So this use of the word gross is very accurate, whether you take it in the terms of Webster's Dictionary, the modern slang, or the other resource. So Prabhupada's making it clear by using this word that materialistic life, that the pursuit of mundane happiness with no higher thought of consciousness or, you know, elevation is blatantly unacceptable, wrong, and should be rejected. This is what Prabhupada's establishing right here. And those of us who are seated here, or who are seated at home listening, as we discuss the Bhagavatam, we've already accepted this conclusion. We've already made our lives based on these choices. We've already distinguished ourselves from the gross materialist. So, we're finished with that group. We're not there. Now, the next group that Prabhupada defines is the demigod worshippers. I always like to mention when this particular subject comes up that this was a principal point in many of the teachings of Mahaprabhu and his associates at the time, dealing with those who were demigod worshippers, and because of their being demigod worshippers, having a particularly limited range of appreciation for pure devotees, for Vaishnavas, for those on the path of serving Mahaprabhu, for the Gaudiyas, quite frankly. The example of Durga worshippers being upset with Srivas, whose appearance day we just celebrated. Many wonderful pastimes. I was so fortunate to speak on his pastimes at his home one time, and it was just so ecstatic. But the Durga worshippers, they came and placed all these articles. We know the story. They were unhappy about what was going on there, the kirtans in the evening and all this ecstatic worship of the holy name. And so they put all these articles, you know, for the worship of Durga. Oh, yes, he got up in the morning. Yes, yes, this is me. This is what I'm doing in secret. Everyone knew this wasn't true. The sons of Shivananda Acharya, Hari Ram and Ramakrishna, the two goat herding boys in the pastime of Narottam Das Thakur, they also, you know, worshipping their father, Shivananda Acharya, was a big, big Durga. He was like, you know, he was like the Durga worshipper. You know, and he had given so much money to the boys. You go and buy all these goats and buffalo and bring them back for the offering of slaughtered animals in this heinous act of animal sacrifice to Mother Durga. Of course, we know the other half of that story is they, by chance, coincidence, bumped into Narottam and Ramchandra Kaviraj. An interesting thing about Narottam and Ramchandra Kaviraj, generally the guideline is that one does not instruct in the presence of the gurus still living. But in the case of Narottam and Ramchandra Kaviraj, they were both initiating. I'm sorry, one doesn't initiate in the presence of the guru still living. But in the case of Narottam Ramchandra Kaviraj, Ramchandra Kaviraj, of course, being the disciple of Srinivas Acharya and being given to Narottam by Srinivas for their sangha together, they would both initiate. They would go to a place, that and sit down, and then you know, you take this group, you take that group, you know, like that. So when they were walking and saw these two boys, they decided to have a bit of fun. We know how the story goes, and started speaking about the futility of demigod worship. One entire section of the preaching life of Narottam is based on this, because how it expands out from there, and the people it influenced, and the people that joined as a result of converting these boys, and how fiery these two boys came in their conviction. This is all there in that pastime, but it all hinges back on the worship of the demigods. So, Prabhupada speaks to this in one of the lectures that I mentioned earlier. He says, just like you know amongst the Hindus, the flesh eaters, they're recommending that if you want to eat meat, then you sacrifice one goat before the goddess Kali. And goddess Kali is worshipped once in a month on a dark moon day at night. And there are mantras. The mantras say that within the ear of the animal, it is said that you are sacrificing your life before the deity. So next life, immediately, you get a human form of life. And when you get that human form of life, you'll have the right to come and kill me and take my life also. This is the mantra. Now, if you are a sane man, probably use that word sane. If you are a sane man, you understand that I am killing this goat at the risk of my life in the next birth. So why should I take such a responsibility? Better to stop it altogether. This is the instruction on how to sacrifice animals. It is not something done daily in, as Prabhupada would say, slaughterhouses, you know, by the millions and so on like that. But that there's a reaction for it, and therefore the conversation of how to do this involves accepting this reaction. You know, we're all parents here. If the children are given some particular instruction and they do or don't follow it, there's always some reaction that's attached to that. If you behave in this way, you can have the car on the weekend. If you don't do your chores, you don't get to stay up late and do, you know, whatever. So there's a reaction here. Okay, you want to eat meat? All right. Once a month, a goat, which I guess if you know how to cook is possible, and then you got to accept the fact that you're going to be a goat in your next life and get killed. I mean, all right, why don't I just have some sweet potatoes and call it even? So this is the idea behind these kind of restrictions. Now, elsewhere in this chapter, Prabhupada notes as well the reasons for worshiping the different demigods. It's not that it's not acceptable. It's part of the system. It's part of the Vedic outline. And there are specific demigods there. You want good fortune? Worship Durga. You want good sex? Worship Indra. You want to be a great hero? Worship the Rudras. You're after money only? Worship the Vasus. You want to be very powerful? Worship Agni. You want a long lifespan? Worship the Asvini Kumaras. You want to be very beautiful? Worship the Gandharvas. You want a great bank balance? Worship Varuna. And so on and so on and so on. The list goes 33 million demigods. That means there's 33 million material desires, at least, out there that can be fulfilled by these demigods. But we sometimes see that devotees also are engaged in the worship of demigods. How is that? Well, we see how that worship goes on. For instance, if we look at the introduction to Chaitanya Mangala by Lochan Das Thakur, and I repeat this, he prays. I pray to Sri Vignasana, Lord Ganesh, who has the body of a huge elephant with one tusk. He brings success in all endeavors. All glories to Lord Ganesh, the son of Parvati Devi. With folded hands, I pray to Lord Shiva and Parvati. Let us fall at their feet, offering our respects. Lord Vishnu is the only master of the three worlds. Lord Shiva and Parvati can award anyone the boon of Vishnu Bhakti. I pray that Goddess Saraswati will play on my lips so that they will glorify Gaura Hari, who as yet is unknown to the three worlds. May the wonderful topics of the golden-hued Lord of Saraswati flow from my mouth. I humbly beg the demigods and all my superiors that nothing will obstruct my attempt to glorify Lord Gaura Hari. Let me not ask for the boon of wealth, for I am fallen and sinful, but please allow me to complete this book without any difficulty. For the purpose of fulfilling successfully his devotional service, we see that Lochan Das Thakur is taking the blessings of everyone. What to speak of the demigods who actually have blessings? We've already listed just here the different benedictions they can give. Now, granted, the demigods are well aware of the fact that their ability to give these benedictions is only by the mercy of the Lord. But they have this potency, they have this position, this managerial responsibility. So Lochan Das Thakur is praying to those different personalities that can give the benediction to complete his task of what? Becoming very wealthy? Becoming very famous? Becoming very powerful? No, of glorifying Lord Gaura Hari. Isn't this what we all want? We want to be able to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead in any of his forms. Particularly, Lochan Das Thakur is tasked with this Chaitanya Mangala, glorification of so many wonderful pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I mean, I know there's no one here that hasn't, but if by chance you have not yet read Chaitanya Mangala, run home and do it. This is such a wonderful book. And why is it so wonderful? Well, a number of reasons, but one particular reason is the author's ability to describe the pastimes of the Lord without any hindrance, without any difficulty, because he has requested these personalities who can award such. He's not asking for these benedictions for anything other than the glorification of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur established many temples to Lord Shiva, known as the protector of the Dham. To establish Lord Shiva's ability to protect different quarters of the pastimes of the Personality of Godhead from different influences of material energy. Additionally, there are prayers offered by the Vaishnavas to Lord Shiva. Ohe Shetrapala Shiva Timadoya Maya, Krishna Bhakti Dehamaya Hahida Sudaya. O Shetrapala, Lord Shiva, protector of the Dham, you are certainly very merciful. Being kind to me, please give me love for Krishna. What a wonderful prayer. What a wonderful request. What a capable personality to give that. Or, varam ekam vrinam tapi, punat kam mandivashanat, bhagavat achutyam bhaktim, tat prishva tat tatvahi. O Lord Shiva, Shankar, you are completely free of desires. You therefore fulfill the desires of your devotees. When I was reading this, my wife, I was preparing for this, my wife said, what was that one devotee that worshipped Lord Shiva? Tripurari? That was going to cut off his head. Drikasura. Yeah, was going to cut off his head just to please Lord Shiva. All right, Lord Shiva is pleased by his devotees. So what does the Vajra? Seeing you, I am offering this prayer. Please fulfill my desire. Let me have unflinching devotion to Krishna. So we have desires. Dehi, 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 Prabhupada says. So are our desires for good fortune, good sex, to be a great hero, more money, blah, 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 blah? Or are they for Krishna Bhakti? And if they are for Krishna Bhakti, then who do we get that from? Well, right here, we see sometimes we can get that there. And then one last verse. Srimad Gopishwaram Bande Shankaram Karanam Mayam Sarva Klesha, any difficulties. Sarva Klesha Haram Devam Vrindaranya Radhi Padam. I offer my respectful obeisances to Sri Gopeshwar, Lord of the Gopis, who is merciful Shiva himself. He removes all troubles and grants spiritual love for Sri Vrindavan. Who doesn't want to have love in their heart for Vrindavan, for Govardhan, for Radhakund, Shyamakund? So this is a prayer here. So in this way, devotees are not looking to the demigods for all the above-noted material gifts or facilities or benedictions that are there, 33 million of them, but they're begging, they're pleading, they're asking for assistance and facility in their service, for facility in their desire to be devoted exclusively to Krishna. This is their desire. And if this is the desire of the devotee will go anywhere. I mean, even me, sometimes devotees come and say, Prabhu, please give me a benediction, I can go to Govardhan. What benediction? But devotee wants something, and they think it can come from someone, so they'll go to anyone, if that person can give that. So in this way, yes, sometimes devotees worship the demigods, but not for material, mundane satisfaction. For Krishna Bhakti, for unflinching faith in Krishna, for love for Vrindavan. Now, however, in verse 9, as well as this verse here also, it's made clear what the goal is and how to get there. And quote, but one who desires nothing of material enjoyment should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's the culmination. Here's the third group, those who are engaged like this. And it continues, all the different kinds of worshippers, this is verse today, of multi-demigods can obtain the highest perfectional benediction, which is spontaneous attraction, unflinchingly fixed upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Wonderful verse. Now, this is great news. It's very good news. How do we get this spontaneous attraction unflinchingly? The two caveats. Spontaneous attraction, unflinching. Well, the end of the verse there, the next line in the verse says it. Only by the association of the pure devotee of the Lord. Now, when Prabhupada lectured on this particular verse, he said this. He said, this is the secret. Association of the pure devotee of the Lord. Without association of the pure devotee of the Lord, nobody can come to the stage of unflinching faith and devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's a secret. It's a very important secret. Now, as Benjamin Franklin said, three people can keep a secret if two of them are dead. So this is not actually meant to be kept as a secret. It's a secret in the sense that it's not so clear unless you're given that entrance there. And then once you get that, immediately you want to share it. So it's really not a secret. Dip knows this. You know, he's out there sharing it every day. He was just telling me yesterday. He was in Lake City the other day out there in the parking lots, and it was so hot his shoes were sticking to the pavement. He had to lift each leg up as he wanted to take a step. You know, it was like glue or something, you know. Why is he out there doing it? I was at work the other day, and I had this customer come in to the store barefoot. And I thought, okay, you're not Sanatan Goswami. Let's analyze this for a second. You know, you had to walk across that parking lot, which when I go out to my car, as Dib confirmed this also, when I go out to my car and turn it on, the thermometer reads 104, 105, 106. That's what it's like out there. On the pavement. So you had to walk in barefoot, and then you're walking through a warehouse type store, and believe me, I know, I worked there. There's every kind of damage on the floor there, nails and pieces of wood and whatever, and you're barefoot. So this is insane. But at any rate, that's how hot it is out there. So people like Div, devotees like Div, they go out every day and do this, you know, because this secret is meant to be given. You know the famous story with Ramanuja getting on top of the mantras? Because he wanted everybody to know. Oh, but I told you, not to. Yes, all right, so curse me, but at least everybody will get the mantra. So, unlike the statement of Ben Franklin here, this secret is meant to be shared. It's not actually meant to be kept as a secret. The teachings of the Vedas are called a secret, but they're a secret that is given to everyone. It is freely passed out. Now, to reiterate this point, Prabhupada makes the following statement. Only by the grace of the divine personalities, the pure devotees of the Lord, can one achieve pure devotion, which is the highest perfection of human life. Only a pure devotee of the Lord can show one the right way of progressive life. We can expand that just a bit for the sake of this conversation, or one who is in contact with the pure devotee of the Lord. Because that contact means you're infected. Right? We've just gone through 2 years of no contact. You know, put the mask, keep a distance, you know, X is on the floor every 6 feet. Everything's shut, you know, whatever. Whatever it took, no contact, because we didn't want anything to spread. Very much unlike this. We want that contact. We want to get infected. We want it to spread. We want to give it to everyone. This past visit from Sachinandana Swami here, that Sunday night kirtan, I can't remember the last time there was that many devotees shoulder to shoulder just ripping it up during kirtan in the temple. It was so ecstatic. You know, something that we missed so much because we want that contact. We want to get infected. We want the bliss of the secret to go everywhere. So this is Prabhupada's mood. And then finally, and wonderfully, Prabhupada concludes his statement referring to the Bhagavad Gita. Now, I've said this many times. Everything goes back to the Bhagavad Gita. Everything goes back to the Bhagavad Gita. So he gives a statement, but Prabhupada throws a caveat in there, a little something. But the Bhagavad Gita can be understood in the association of pure devotees only, not by the interpretations of politicians or dry philosophical speculators. So many people have written Bhagavad Gita. I don't know about all of you, but before I became a devotee, before I came in contact with Prabhupada's Gita, so many people writing about the Bhagavad Gita and saying so many things, you know, just utter nonsense. I mean, as I look back on these things now, you know, it's, you know, of course, most of all of that was fueled by not even, as Prabhupada says here, politicians or dry speculators, but by psychedelically warped brains of people thinking they were giving spiritual guidance, you know. Prabhupada is a pure devotee. Prabhupada, as he said many times, I'm simply giving what Krishna has given. I'm not changing or adding anything. Not making any additions or subtractions. This is the way it is. So this is not the way Bhagavad Gita is presented by those who are politicians trying to support their own point of view, or by philosophers. And Prabhupada uses the word dry philosophers because it's a very dry process. There is no bhakti dripping. You know, just like sometimes you get those mangoes, you know, from the grocery store. So I offer fruit to my deities every morning. So sometimes you cut that open and just the cut of the knife and the juices of the mango are dripping out. And it's just like, oh, this is going to be a great mango for Giridhari. But then other times you cut it and there's just, you get all the way to the thing, you open it up and you slice it and there's just no juice there. You can know this is a dry mango. And I mean, let's be honest, there's nothing worse than a dry mango. Because your expectations are completely the opposite. What's it describes in the fifth canto? Mangoes as big as elephants that drop, and when they hit the ground, they break open, and there's a lake of mango juice. That's the kind of mango you want to offer the Lord. But no, if you get that dry mango, it's like, ugh. So the dry speculators on the Bhagavad Gita, this is what their life is like. Just that dry, useless mango. Just throw the pit in the compost and be done with it. Maybe a tree will grow from it that'll be better. So, this is the thing. Now, as I was reading, you know, not all of you, but some of us live by the notes we prepare. And so as I was preparing my notes, I skipped this. I didn't catch this point. But as I was reading it here, something came to me. Let me go back here and catch this. Here. The gross materialist, this is from the purport today. The gross materialist, however, without any faith in the Vedic version, remains eternally in darkness, driven by a false conviction on the basis of imperfect experimental knowledge. Wow, is this not the culmination of exactly how every materialist is living their life? I mean, if you take a look at or hear or read or see the news, you can apply this to circumstances going on in our political world, you know, that people are convinced of certain information, false convictions based on imperfect knowledge. But if you expand it beyond that, you look at how people are going day by day convinced that their material life is going to bring them happiness. They've gotten no happiness from it. They've experienced no real joy. They're finding that it's being taken away from them day by day, but they're still convinced that if I just keep them... We have a sign, it's a sales encouragement or a sales motivation, a little poster at work, and it says, if you want a different result, don't keep doing the same thing. So if you want better sales, don't keep using the same method you're using. That's the point. But the bottom line is, if you want a different result, then don't keep doing the same thing. If you want something other than birth, death, old age, and disease, then distress, happiness, anxiety, then don't keep doing the same mundane activities and expect that the result will change. Because it won't. It's not going to change. The result will be the same if you keep doing the same thing. So this is such an important thing, because people have this conviction in material life. It's a false conviction, as Prabhupada says here. And what's it based on? The imperfect gathering of knowledge by their senses. The senses will cheat you every time. Every single time. Oh man, if I just eat four more glub shamans, I'll really be happy. Now, glub shamans is a little special because it's offered to the Lord and it's prasadam, but from the physiology point of the stomach, four more glub shamans and I'll be good. Oh, it's probably not going to work that way. You know, if I just get one more, whatever it is, just do more and more and more, then I'll be happy. But we're not happy. So, actually, I got to take that glub shaman response back. You can't eat too many glub shamans. But the point is that by these false convictions of material enjoyment, people are convinced they'll be happy. And they can't accept other knowledge. I don't know if I mentioned this class I gave last week, but I have a person I see regularly and said to me, I heard from some of our mutual friends that you're a Hare Krishna guy. I said, yeah. I have been for, you know, some 40 plus years. He said, and I heard you kind of like travel around and speak and lecture. I said, yeah, somewhat, yeah. He said, and you guys believe in reincarnation? I said, absolutely. I said, it's not like you're going to become the dog. I said, but your soul is transmigrating through different bodies. And at the end, it's going to go somewhere. And maybe it's in a dog body. Maybe it's in this body or that body. He said, how's that even possible? Because the conviction is that, no, I'm this body. How can this body turn into something else? So I explained to him, well, you know, you were a little kid's body. Where's that baby body you had? You had a baby's body, right? Well, yeah. And you had a little kid's body, right? But they're gone and you're still here. So you've already reincarnated into different... No, that's not the same. I said, it is the same. I said, your soul's eternal. That's what you have to realize, that there's a difference between the body and the soul. I don't know. I can't buy it. I can't buy it. The last thing any salesman wants to hear, I can't buy it. We're trying to give this secret of Krishna consciousness away. What's the price? You know, I said, there is no price. Just Kripa, mercy. And the Namhata, you know, they gave the holy name away. He didn't charge a price. Well, let me see, what's your credit card rating? Oh, no, I'm sorry, you can't have it. That was not Nittai's mood. Nittai was giving the holy name freely. So we're giving this information, but sometimes they simply are not qualified. They don't have enough pious activity. They don't have enough benefit. They haven't eaten enough prasadam. This individual gets prasadam too, and he said, yeah, sometimes I eat it, sometimes I just look at it and throw it away. So this is the sum and substance here, you know? Three categories of personalities: gross materialists, demigod worshippers, and Vaishnavas. We've already been through two, of these categories. We're trying to be that third category, and the process for doing so, as Prabhupada concludes here once again. But the Bhagavad Gita can be understood. Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, insert your favorite shastra there, can only be understood in the association of pure devotees and not by other interpretations. So we're so fortunate to have the shelter, the guidance, and the good instructions of a pure devotee and of the caliber of Srila Prabhupada, and have him present in our life by daily staying in touch with the books, daily getting this association, and daily keeping his information and sharing the secret that he's given us. So, thank you very much. We'll finish there. Anybody has any comments or questions, corrections, chastisements?
Hare Krishna.
Which one is it? What? Yes, Jajar. Hold on a second. Just my hearing. It's okay. Go ahead.
Just to reiterate you, there's no coincidence. I was that there. Anyway, so the other day I had to drive from Ocala to Daytona Beach to pick up something, and I just thought there was like three different roads I could have taken, and I said, well, okay, you know, and so I just kind of listened as best as I could, and I took this one road, trying to stay awake, eating prasadam. Finally, I was awake, so I'm looking for my beads so I could chant a few more rounds. And I couldn't find them anywhere. And, you know, it's about a 100-mile drive, you know. And I'm driving, so couldn't find them. So then I pull over on the side of the road. You know, my beads had gotten down by the side of the seat, you know. Finally got them out. And I look over my shoulder, and here's a Vaishnav Tilak sign, huge. And then it says Veda Foundation Cow Sanctuary. So it's the Deland temple there that Bhakti Charu started. And I'm thinking, how is it possible at a 100-mile journey that I would pull over on the side of the road next to the sign? You know, I'm thinking, wow, Krishna, this is going to save me after all.
Krishna did save you. We'll leave the conversation of chanting on your beads while you're driving for another time. Don't try that in front of Indradumna Swami. He simply does not allow it.
Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the nice class. My question is, considering like some of those demigods who are good devotees of the Lord, and if you consider them as a devotee and then you also pray them like just like an association as a pure devotee is here, and you know you pray them, okay, hey Ganesha, you know, remove all the obstacles, or Lakshmi, give me the money so that you know I can do my devotional service to the Lord, is there anything wrong with that process? Or
that's the key factor, am I offering these prayers and putting forth these requests for my pleasure or for the satisfaction of the devotees, for the service of the devotees? There's certainly nothing wrong with, for instance, every time before I prepare a class, I pray to Saraswati to please allow me to speak nicely so the devotees become enlivened, so the devotees appreciate the message of Prabhupada. So certainly nothing wrong with that. You know, praying to Lakshmi Devi to please make this deal go through successfully so that I have sufficient funds and then I can give to the... There's nothing wrong with that. However, due to our conditioning, many times we see that... What's that Prabhupada says? Many a slip twists the cup in the lip. So when you're drinking, sometimes it spills. So... you know, if I pray to Lakshmi Devi for $1 million, then when I get that $1 million, am I really going to give 500,000 of it to the temple, or 1,000 for the temple and 9,999 for, you know, like that? So better, you know, I mean, it can be done. We see from Lochan Das Thakur, Bhaktam Nothu, it can be done. But we have to be of a certain caliber not to get sidetracked by those materials. We have to have purified ourselves. Therefore, as the conclusion is here, one who has unflinching faith in the Supreme Personality of God, it simply worships him. These demigods can only give us that by Krishna's blessing anyway. A lot of times, younger devotees will ask my wife and I, how is it that, you know, you've made your decisions as grihasthas for all these years to, and you've been able to stay in devotional service? And I always point out that any decision we made in our life, we made sure that Krishna was at the center of it, that we were near a temple, that we were with devotees, that we were in a community, something like that. And therefore, that satisfies Krishna, and he'll fulfill all other desires. There have been times things have been a little rough. There have been times things have been very comfortable. But if we have Krishna at the center of all that, then, you know, it'll all work out. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a fluid conversation, we could say. Yeah. Madhavati, then Trivikram, then Gadagaraj.
Thank you, Prabhu, for the class. It's related to Abhigya Prabhu's question. Is there any extra? Certainly, there's nothing wrong to worship the demigods for the purpose of, like you're mentioning, Bhaktivinoda Das Thakur. Is there any benefit for worshipping demigods for Krishna Bhakti?
Benefit? Well, the benefit's just in those verses, for instance, where she can give love for Vrindavan and give unflinching faith in Krishna.
In contrast to just asking, always just asking Krishna, you know, we train to always approach Krishna. And so is there any side benefit or?
It doesn't seem that there would be. That's why the verse concludes, one who is realized unflinching faith in Krishna. Now, in the worship of the demigods, there are certain caveats. You know, even when one's worshiping Lord Shiva, for instance, when one does Govardhan Parikrama, there's the Shiva temple at Radhakund, Kundeshwar Mahadev. And one generally goes there and prays for blessings, he will complete the parikrama. Okay? So it's certainly beneficial. At the same time, it's expected that there must be some offering. You know, so if you're just praying to Govardhan the whole time, Giriraj, please let me complete this. Giriraj, please help me complete it. Ase shaklesha nishaya. Please remove all obstacles. When I was with a group of devotees and we were doing Govardhan Parikrama, our prayer every so many steps was Ase shaklesha nishaya. Please remove all obstacles, Giriraj. Please remove all obstacles. A little more direct. You know. Okay. Microphone coming.
1 billion Vedic followers, 800 million demigod worshippers, maybe 200 million Vaishnavas. How we can swing the table around?
Say that again?
1 billion Vedic followers.
1 billion Vedic followers.
800 million demigod worshippers and Mayavadis. 200 million Vaishnavas, different categories. How we can turn the table around?
Where do those figures come from?
Where do those figures come from? University of Trinidad.
University of the mind?
No. Go online and you can get it.
Well, the Vaishnavas are... Here's a point to consider. The Vaishnavas are unlimitedly merciful. The demigods might be merciful. You know? Sometimes the demigods are not in the best of moods. I mean, they are jivas to some lesser degree than us, certainly, but they're impacted by the modes of nature. I mean, how else... I mean, other than Leela, but how else do we explain Brahma not understanding Krishna as the eternal cowherd boy and stealing all the cows and calves? How do we understand Indra? What? I'm not being worshipped? Yes, this is Krishna's Leela, but at the same time, these personalities had to go at the end and make, you know, penance, you know? So, okay, there may be more demigods. You might be able to get more of them and get more. But if you hit one of them at the wrong time, you can get cursed. Look at Durvasa Muni, great sage.
Well, you want to be careful around him. He has got a temper. Gotta grow it through. Another old St. Louis veteran. Many of you don't know this.
Nityananda's in the Namhat.
Ah, Nitya in the Namhat.
He's giving out the Hari Nam, the holy name. But there is a price. So what is that price?
Shraddha. Shraddha, faith.
A little faith, right?
Yes. Choti Shraddha, Choti Shraddha. All right, we'll finish up. Pran? Oh, wait, microphone.
22 chapter, 10th canto, about the Basra Haram Lila.
Uh-huh.
So all those young girls, gopis, they were introduced to worship Katyayani.
Katyayani, yeah.
And the verse.
Katyayani Vrata, one entire month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the verse, if you break down analytically, Katyayani Mahamaye Mahajogi Odishari Nanda Goposuta Devi Patimme Kurte Namah. Patim, we want Pati. So then Acharyas are giving their comment. Why not introduce, they already want Krishna as their husband. Why not introduce worshipping Krishna? Why you have to go around worshipping Katyayani? So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, because anybody worship Supreme Lord Krishna, Krishna is great and sweet. His greatness has to manifest first before sweetness. Then this is proper. Because greatness evokes submission and sweetness evokes affection. We need both, but submission has to be first, then affection. So because if they worship Krishna, that his opulence will manifest. If you want to marry a person or in love in person because of his opulence, it's not a pure love, it may be a little bit tilted. So that's why it was introduced that worship the demigod, not Krishna directly.
And Prabhupada confirms this in this lecture series I'm listening to. He was saying how the residents of Vrindavan, they don't know Krishna is God. Yes. They don't want to know Krishna is God.
Yes.
It ruins the mood if they know Krishna is God.
Yes.
And they just want that sweetness. Oh, I have to feed Krishna, I have to worship him. You know. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, all goes to Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna.
Very nice question.